Hello and welcome back to the Bookshelf Odyssey, and we're continuing our deep dive into Dickens. And today we're looking at Great Expectations, chapters 20 through 22, and that covers parts 13 and 14 of the work. So I don't have as much time to record today, so I want to get into the text right away. But below you'll find all the information you need if you want to follow along, join in discussion on our Voxer channel, or on the Discord channel, and you'll find the links below. Well, we left off Pip with an incredible life-changing moment when a stranger comes to him and says, "Somebody has given you a ton of money. Your life has changed. You get to be a gentleman. Your dream has come true." And this has changed Pip's entire direction in life. We pick up in chapter 20, and 21 is next week's part, and we find out what happens. This section, not a lot plot-wise happens, other than we get to see Pip's transition from the Marsh to London. And he goes to Mr. Jagger's office. He meets a person named Mr. Wemmick, who will be a character more developed in the chapters to come. Mr. Wemmick is one of my favorite characters from this book. I'll explain more why when we get to see him in more detail. So as we follow Pip in chapter 20, he is taken and has opportunity to explore London, and he finds it to be a place that is very run down and dirty, and almost I get the sense he's a little disappointed, you know, that he couldn't wait to get there. These were his expectations, to go to London and become a gentleman, but now that he's there, he finds the place very, very dirty and run down. And he's also given a tour of the prison. So again, we get some of that prison imagery. He's shown where the gallows are. And I was kept waiting for him for that guilt to surface, although we don't really get it as much as it was when he was a child. So hopefully that means he's growing out of that a little bit. We also get an example, something that's somewhat unfortunate, but was common at the time, and that is it's a minor character, just really for this chapter, but he's supposed to be a Jewish man, and he's caricaturized and not really portrayed in a good light. And unfortunately, that was very common during this time that Dickens was writing. And in fact, Dickens, in some of his earlier works, Oliver Twist, infamously, he really seems to be mocking the stereotype of a Jewish person. And I don't remember the name of the person who wrote, but somebody wrote to Dickens at one point in his life to object to the way that Jewish people were being portrayed in his work. And so that led him to actually make some changes to Oliver Twist in subsequent publishing. And then he also wrote a very honorable Jewish man character in Our Mutual Friend. So Dickens, throughout his time then, began to reevaluate some of those things, I think, and began to, if you compare his later works with his earlier works, you really see his opinion on things like women characters and even this Jewish character have changed. Still a lot of work to be done. Understanding it's the time that he was writing in, not that that excuses it, it doesn't, but you know, 100 years from now, people will look back at what we wrote and said, and many of us will probably not be aware of things that we could have said better and done better. But what encourages me about Dickens is that you see change in his points of view, and that's a good thing. So long story short there for chapter 20, Pip gets to London. He visits Mr. Jagger's office, and Jagger's has Wemmick will take him to what will be his new home. And then so chapter 21, we get this description of Wemmick, which I'll read here. It says, "Casting my eyes on Mr. Wemmick as we went along to see what he was like in the light of day, I found him to be a dry man, rather short in stature, with a square wooden face whose expression seemed to have been imperfectly chipped out with a dull-edged chisel. There were some marks in it that might have been dimples, if the material had been softer and the instrument finer, but which, as it was, were only dints. The chisel had made three or four of these attempts at embellishment over his nose, but had given them up without an effort to smooth them off. I judged him to be a bachelor from the frayed condition of his linen, and he appeared to have sustained a good many bereavements, for he wore at least 4 mourning rings, besides a brooch, representing a lady in a weeping willow at a tomb with an urn on it. I noticed, too, that several rings and seals hung on his watch chain, as if he were quite laden with remembrances of departed friends. He had glittering eyes, small, keen, and black, and thin, wide, mottled lips. He had had them, to the best of my belief, from 40 to 50 years. So just an example of some of Dickens's amazing character description. You get all these pictures of him that he's laden with remembrances of friends who have departed. This man might have seen a lot of grief in his lifetime and how that weighed him down. And so now Wemmick takes him to his apartment, his new home, that he'll be sharing, as we find out, with Mr. Pocket Jr., who is the son of Matthew Pocket, this man we've heard a lot of but haven't met yet. He says this when he sees his home, Bernard's Inn. He says, "My depression was not alleviated by the announcement, for I had supposed that establishment to be a hotel kept by Mr. Bernard, to which the Blue Boar in our town was a mere public house. Whereas I now found Bernard to be a disembodied spirit or a fiction, and his inn the dingiest collection of shabby buildings ever squeezed together in a rank corner as a club for tomcats." And he describes how everything is dirty and dusty and in decaying. It is filthy and run down and empty. It says as he's passing different rooms in the hallways, it says he sees signs that say, "To let, to let, to let," glared at me from empty rooms, as if no new wretches ever came there, and the vengeance of the soul of Bernard were being slowly appeased by the gradual suicide of the present occupants and their unholy interment under the gravel. Wow, he's got a gloomy outlook. So again, I get the sense that he's disappointed. Be careful about what you wish for, because it might not be what you get. It might not be what you expect. So after Mr. Wemmick drops Pip off at his new apartment, he is left to ponder his life to this point. And he says, "I was content to take a foggy view of the inn through the window's encrusting dirt, and to stand dolefully looking out, saying to myself that London was decidedly overrated." And there I see that maybe he is just not content with what he's been given. That maybe he's exchanging one rundown home for another. So again, be careful what you wish for. The chapter ends with both of them realizing that they've met each other before. Surprise! You know, Dickens loves to do this. He loves to throw in those coincidences that unveil plot details for you. And the young man who is Mr. Pocket Jr. is Herbert Pocket. Herbert Pocket is the pale young gentleman that Pip fought in the courtyard at Miss Havisham's house. And that's where the chapter or section 13 leaves us. And I'm left wondering, well, are they going to start fighting again? Are they going to be enemies? How, who, what, when, where, why? You know, how did this all come together? But fortunately, we only have to wait a week to find out what happens next, right? And this part 13 was published on February 23rd, 1861. So chapter 22, we find that the pale young gentleman, Herbert Pocket, is in fact going to be friendly with Pip. Herbert reminds Pip about how they met, and his side of the story isn't quite aligned with what actually happened. You know, Herbert is making it sound like he was the one who beat up Pip, when Pip and all of us know it was the other way around. But Pip decides to just let this slide. So they are kind of rehashing what happened since they last met. Herbert explains that he has not yet become rich. He had thought maybe Miss Havisham was going to bestow her wealth upon him, but he said he didn't make the cut. Herbert asks him, he says, "You hadn't come into your good fortune at that time," said Herbert Pocket. That's when they first met. "No," said I. "No," he acquiesced. "I heard it happened very lately. I was rather on the lookout for good fortune then." "Indeed?" "Yes. Miss Havisham had sent for me to see if she could take a fancy to me, but she couldn't. At all events, she didn't." I thought it polite to remark that I was surprised to hear that. "Bad taste," said Herbert, laughing, "but a fact. Yes, she had sent for me on a trial visit, and if I had come out of it successfully, I suppose I should have been provided for. Perhaps I should have been what you may call it to Estella. What's that? I asked with sudden gravity. So now, you know, Pip's attention is brought, and Herbert goes on to explain that he would have likely been engaged to Estella if he had gotten the wealth from Mrs. Havisham. So now Pip is getting excited because he's thinking, well, Miss Havisham gave me her fortune. That means she is intending Estella for me. And I still can't understand why this guy wants Estella, who is mean and cruel to him. But we'll just follow this plot and see where Dickens takes us. Okay. Pip does ask, as he and Herbert get to know each other, he does ask Herbert to help him become a gentleman. You know, that if he understands that my behavior and my mannerisms are not what gentlemen do, so help me, correct me if I'm wrong. And Herbert says that he will. Pip gets a nickname from Herbert. He calls him Handel because there was a classical composer, Handel, wrote that it was called the Harmonious Blacksmith. I thought it was interesting how Dickens will often give his characters nicknames. And I'm thinking especially of David Copperfield in that novel. He gets several nicknames. What is Dickens trying to say there about identity? That maybe Pip is still trying to figure out who he is and who he's going to be. Same with David Copperfield. His identity is always in flux because he's trying to figure out his life. As they sit down to dinner, Herbert spills the tea about Miss Havisham. So, pull up a chair, everyone, because the tea is about to be spilled. He says, "Let me introduce the topic, Handel, by mentioning that in London it is not the custom to put the knife in the mouth, for fear of accidents, and that while the fork is reserved for that use, it is not put further in than necessary. It is scarcely worth mentioning, only it's as well to do as other people do. Also, the spoon is not generally used overhand, but under. This has two advantages. You get at your mouth better, which, after all, is the object, and you save a good deal of the attitude of opening oysters on the part of the right elbow." And I love how he is correcting Pip in a gentle and yet fun way. You know, he's doing it very kindly and not with arrogance. I mean, can you imagine? Let's look at the difference between Estella and Pip, or Estella and Herbert. You know, Estella mocked him. Estella made fun of him, ridiculed him, tormented him because he was backwards. Herbert is just being buddy, chum. Hey, you know, let's. It's better to eat this way because here's why. And it's also what the gentlemen do, and you'd be better off doing it this way. I just think that's a remarkable comparison between the two. So he gives us information about Miss Havisham. There are some things that we've kind of hinted at, but we get a fuller picture. That her father was a country gentleman down near where Pip lived. And he remarried, so I assume his first wife must have died, and had another child. So Miss Havisham has a half-brother. Okay, I'm going to read to you from a summary that I really enjoy. It's on schmoop.com. And I like that they take classics, kind of like Spark Notes, places like that, and they give you chapter summaries, but they do it in a really funny way. Here's how they write the summary, because I was struggling trying to put it in my own words, but I like how they summarize this as to what happened with Miss Havisham. Dad died. He had left her stepbrother a nice fortune, but left Miss Havisham with the big dough, you know, a lot of money. And since Miss Havisham was rich and pretty, she was considered quite a catch. But it just so happened that she fell in love with the wrong man, the seriously wrong man. He wasn't a gentleman at all. He was a rake who convinced her to buy her stepbrother out of his share of the brewery at a huge cost. Herbert's dad, Mr. Pocket, warned his cousin that she received a letter from him calling the whole thing off. No one knows what the letter said, but Miss Havisham went a little crazy after reading that letter and fell very ill. She let the mansion go to ruin, and that was that. Apparently, Miss Havisham's stepbrother and the gentleman were in cahoots with each other all along and had meant to rob Miss Havisham of her fortune. They also wanted to embarrass her publicly. This ends Herbert's account of Miss Havisham's story, and yeah, we feel pretty sorry for her. And again, that's the summary from schmoop.com, and I'll have the link in the show notes for you if you want to check out that website. But I really enjoy the humorous take that they have on summarizing these chapters. So this explains why Miss Havisham froze in time. You know, she is still in her wedding dress. She is still, everything stopped because this man she was going to marry turned out to be a scoundrel and it just broke her. Pip asks, well, I wonder he didn't marry her and get all the property that way. And Herbert says he may have been married already, and her cruel mortification may have been a part of her half-brother's scheme, said Herbert. But mind, I don't know that. So then he asks, what became of the two men? And they fell into deeper shame and degradation, if there can be deeper, and ruin. And Pip asks, are they alive now? Herbert says, I don't know. We still don't know much about Estella. Miss Havisham adopted her, but her background is still somewhat mysterious. After dinner, Herbert and Pip, we find them kind of looking over the town, touring the town, getting to know it, getting to see it again. We experienced the views through Pip's eyes, and this time it's not quite as glum. And he's being reminded of Joe. Even here it says that he saw the horses as they're walking along in the parks, and he wondered who shod all the horses there and wished it was Joe. But I'm encouraged by his friend Herbert, that Herbert seems to be a good man and will hopefully be a good influence on Pip. Eventually, they go and visit Herbert's family, and we meet Mr. Pocket, and we meet Mrs. Pocket, who is sitting around reading a book while her children play on the ground. And she has a couple of nursemaids to help her, so all she has to do is just sit and read, and somebody else takes care of their children. And yeah, where can I get one of those? You know, fortunately, my children are all old enough now to take care of themselves. But I would have enjoyed that back in the day. But I want to read this quote that Pip is observing all those little pockets running around and playing, and he says, unless I deceive myself on a point where my interests or prepossessions are certainly not concerned, I saw that Mr. and Mrs. Pocket's children were not growing up or being brought up, but were tumbling up. And, you know, he's noticing how they're just tumbling around and playing and roughhousing and all that, the things that kids do, and they're having a grand time. And he says that they're not, you know, not being raised so much as they're tumbling up. And I love that description. And I've been thinking about it compared to how Pip was brought up by hand. And how, you know, his sister adopted him, took him in as her own, but in the course of that, there was much neglect, potentially abuse, not an enjoyable atmosphere like the Pocket's siblings are experiencing as they're growing up, as they're tumbling up, as Dickens puts it. Mrs. Pocket decides it's time for bed, and out comes Mr. Pocket. They get a chance to meet him. I'll go ahead and read this closing of this chapter. It says that under these circumstances, when Flopson and Millers, and that's the nursemaids, had got the children into the house like a little flock of sheep, and Mr. Pocket came out of it to make my acquaintance, I was not much surprised to find that Mr. Pocket was a gentleman with a rather perplexed expression of face, and with his very gray hair disordered on his head, as if he didn't quite see his way to putting anything straight. So not quite a cliffhanger where we leave off on part 14, first published on March 2nd, 1861. Mr. Pocket has pretty much been estranged from Miss Havisham, but yet she still expects him to come and stand at the head of her deathbed, of her table, as she's stretched out there dead. And that puts that whole thing into a new perspective, doesn't it? That you would think, oh, Mr. Pocket will be there to honor her, but maybe she's thinking he'll be there to spite her. There's just a lot of family drama there. So it's interesting to go back and read that in a new light. So that brings us to the end of our reading for today. I know I kind of flew through this a little bit. I've been trying to get these to be a little bit shorter. I also didn't feel like I thought maybe chapter 22 had a little more meat to it than for what's to come than the first two chapters did that we read this week. So next week, we will be covering chapters 23 through 27, I believe. I think there's four chapters. But you can read below to get the chapter schedule. And please note that I did change a little bit the schedule. I added in another off week that will come after we finish part or book two. We'll take a break to just kind of recap and catch up, and I can take a breath. But I'm really loving this. Thank you. I had several people chat with me this week about what they're reading, their thoughts about what's coming. Dickens has so many more surprises in store for us, and I can't wait to read them with you. I can't wait to look more at the influence that Herbert will have on Pip, how that will differ and what will be similar with Joe and his influence, as well as people like Estella, Miss Havisham, and even how Mr. Pocket's influence will impact Pip. Those are some things to look forward to in the coming chapters, as well as more plot twists and a roller coaster journey till we get to the end. And so until next time, happy reading and take care.